Hi, Nino. Thank you for joining us today. It's a busy day of breaking news.
It is. No problem, Richard.
As a journalist, you've been covering this from the start. Are you surprised that the hunt for Desi Freeman has ended in this way?
Yes, I am surprised. Everything we'd heard about where Desi was or what had happened to him pointed towards the fact that he was dead and that he'd been dead very soon after he actually killed those police officers in Port Punkar back in August 2025. There's been no confirmed sightings of him for 7 months. Police themselves were saying that they were working off the theory that he'd used one of the weapons he took from police after shooting them dead to kill himself in bushland at the Mount Buffalo National Park, that was the theory they strongly believed and were working on. And so when the news came through on Monday morning that Freeman had in fact been shot after a sort of siege or standoff situation with police at a town almost sort of 200 kilometres northeast of Port Punkar, of where the police shootings had occurred back in August, it was quite a stunning piece of news. And yet this case is nothing if not sort of punctuated by strangeness and uncertainty and weirdness. And part of that is because of what Freeman was himself, a sovereign citizen who kind of went further down that rabbit hole of conspiracy during the pandemic because of the fact he was of that world and because of the circumstances around how he committed these awful crimes back in August, killing police who went to execute a warrant at a rural property. Nothing particularly unusual about it. And then all of a sudden, you know, two are shot dead and a third is injured. Everything since that point has been sort of punctuated by strangeness and by, oh, where could he be? And major media outlets reporting sightings of him in South Africa and other strange things like that. And so in a sense, it's not surprising that it would also end in a strange way and in a way that we weren't expecting because everything about this case has been unusual.
Police say they haven't formally identified him yet, but they believe, strongly believe, obviously, that it is Desi Freeman. And they've given a news conference. They've gone through a lot of detail. There's obviously a lot of questions people want answered. So first of all, do we know how police came to find him in the location he was in?
Look, no, we don't. And I don't think they really have gone through a lot of detail, to be fair. They've gone through some detail about what they think happened after they arrived at that property. It's been described as a semi-rural sort of property and that Freeman himself was at something kind of crossed between a shipping container and a caravan on that property. But they've given very little indication about how police came to be there. What we know is this wasn't a chance encounter. They hadn't gone to that property and knocked on the front door and happened to see Freeman around the back. They'd been at the property since about 5:30 on Monday morning. About 3 hours later was when Freeman was shot dead. There had been a period of around 3 hours where effectively they'd been telling him to surrender. Now, typically with these types of operations, and there's been some reporting to this effect, police will get a tip perhaps even days before they actually went to that property out at Woolwa that may have suggested Freeman was there. Typically they'll sit off a property for a period of days, see what they can see there, do some stuff in the background, trying to work out who actually owns that property, who else is there. And they've obviously done that over a period of days leading up to then moving in very early on Monday morning in a series of events that led to Freeman being shot dead.
Victoria Police Chief Commissioner Mike Bush, he was answering several questions. He indicated that he did believe Desi Freeman may have been getting some help. Just explain a bit about those details that he gave.
Mike Bush is quite careful to sort of not specifically say why that was, but he almost was kind of pointing to the logic of the scenario that this is a guy who has been subject to the biggest manhunt in Victorian history. You've got some of the most heavily armed officers and highly trained officers in the country out looking for him for a period of months, and yet he pops up almost 200 kilometres away.
I also thought it was interesting that he said that there was a lot to suggest Freeman had taken his own life.
That theory about Desi Freeman taking his own life effectively dates back to this report of a single gunshot, which was heard very soon after Freeman killed those two officers in Port Punkar. So basically the sequence of events is there's 10 police knock on his door. There's a standoff. Freeman shoots two officers dead and injures a third. He then flees into the bushland behind this property at Poor Punker. Soon after that, there's a single gunshot heard from the bush. Now, police did a series of acoustic tests to try and basically establish A, what type of firearm may have been behind this gunshot, and B, where did it occur? So they basically were starting to put together this theory of, hey, we reckon that this is what's happened, that he's fled into the bush and then he's shot himself dead with one of the firearms he's taken from police. They then tried to kind of cross-reference that to get a bit of an idea of where his body might be if he had done that. And that was what was behind a quite large search in that area, where they effectively went over all this new ground and tried to get a sense of, has Freeman been here? Is his body here? Can we find any trace of him? And again, that sort of week-long search, which covered a huge amount of terrain in very, very, very thick undergrowth, uncovered nothing. And here we are in late March, and Freeman's been discovered on another rural property almost 200 kilometres away.
You've said that there's a lot of detail missing from what police have told us. Did they give us any idea about whether Freeman was ever hiding in remote bush, how he managed to perhaps survive 7 months since the incident?
Look, they didn't, but Mike Bush gave a very interesting comment that he didn't elaborate on, which basically said police had a very firm theory about what Freeman had done in the 24 to 48 hours after the shooting. Now, that's fascinating to me because, you know, in the time I spent up around Poor Punker, there were people who lived at properties near there who very much were of the belief that if he had escaped that area, it would have been in that 24 to 48 hour period, simply because of how hectic that situation was. There were police sort of fanning out across the countryside and trying to find him, and, you know, at a really high state of alert, I guess, to try and get Freeman. But in terms of roadblocks and in terms of actually preventing people moving in and out, all those people who lived up there at the time were kind of saying to me, look, that was quite fluid because there were people living on rural properties who needed to get out, needed to get away from that crime scene in Poor Punker. So they were allowed through. There were other people moving around to try and, you know, go and feed livestock and make arrangements and things like that. So it was mentioned to me, you know, when I went up there towards the end of 2025 and spoke to people around Poor Punker and the region, it was mentioned to me on a number of occasions that 2 day period immediately after the shooting would have given enough latitude for him to escape if that's in fact what he'd done. And so it's really fascinating that Bush said today that police now have a really clear idea of what he did during that 24 to 48 hour period to get away from the crime scene, although Bush didn't elaborate on what exactly that theory was.
So just to be clear, police are possibly looking at the idea that Desi Freeman may have left the area very early on, basically, potentially.
Potentially, yeah. I mean, what Bush said is we think we know what happened in the 24 to 48 hours after this. That's what he said. He hasn't said what that is, and, you know, like everything in this case, it's subject to as much wild speculation as you can throw at it, really.
I just want to come back to what information we have about this three-hour standoff that's happened, that's ended in the death of Desi Freeman. The Chief Commissioner, Mike Bush, did seem to want to make it very clear that they gave the opportunity for Desi Freeman to come out peacefully. Why might he have been doing that?
He did say that, but he also very carefully sort of couched it as, you know, there's going to be a Professional Standards Command investigation, there's going to be a coronial inquest, but what we believe is we asked Freeman to surrender. We believe he was armed. They're also investigating whether he was armed with those police service weapons that he took back in August. He wouldn't confirm whether or not Freeman had shot at police, but that's something, as again, that he said would be investigated by the coronial process. But Mike Bush very clearly said, look, we believe this shooting was justified. And despite what Freeman did back in August, and you know, we can't in any way forget how awful those crimes were, but when there is a police death in custody such as this one, and when there's a fatal police shooting such as this one, they are subject to a very high degree of coronial scrutiny and internal scrutiny by the force themselves to basically sort of work out, look, was this shooting in and of itself, despite what this person's accused of doing, was it justified? Was that use of force justified? And I think some of the language Mike Bush used today was going to that broader investigative focus from this point on.
Nino, before we get into some of the reaction, what do you think are key missing details that we don't have from police? Things that you really want to know that you haven't been told?
There's so many of them. I mean, the way in which Freeman died today and how police actually got to that property in Waller and what they knew about it, that's all really fascinating. There was a $1 million award for information in this case, and Mike Bush was asked about that and whether anybody was going to be able to claim that and said, look, that'd stay confidential. That's obviously fascinating. I'm familiar with my kind of history of reporting on the police and the justice system, that it's not uncommon for them to use the media as a bit of a tool in certain cases. And Mike Bush was asked today whether the whole theory of Desi Freeman shooting himself with a police weapon and the acoustic testing and all that, whether that was a tactic, whether it was something designed, I suppose, to almost make Desi or his family or people who may have been helping him feel a little bit more at ease and think that, hey, police believe Desi's died, it's getting safer. He can perhaps not be as worried that he's going to get caught now. That would be fascinating if it came out that, look, police had sort of magnified or heightened the likelihood that is what had happened to Freeman as a way of perhaps making him seem more at ease than he would have otherwise been. And then there's all, I suppose, the questions that have lingered ever since August 2025 about the shooting itself and the lead up to it. You know, we still know very little about the sexual offending that police allege Freeman committed, and that was the whole purpose for that warrant being executed that day. We don't know how much credence police gave to the likelihood that Freeman had weapons. I've confirmed that he wasn't a registered firearm owner, but I suspect that other people who lived at that property were. You know, was that part of the risk assessment police did before that day? You know, there were 10 officers who went to execute that warrant, which is more than would normally go to a warrant for something like sexual offending as opposed to alleged violent offending involving firearms or something of the like, but it still obviously wasn't, you know, those officers were outgunned, plainly, and it was a terrible tragedy. And whether that was an intelligence failing, whether it was a risk assessment planning failure, whether it was a combination of the two, whether there was nothing at all that pointed to the fact that Freeman would have done that, I think they're really big questions. And look, I think what's emerged to me over the past 7 months as well is that Desi Freeman was probably a slightly more complex character than we've given him credit for in the media. He wasn't just a, you know, a kind of crackpot conspiracy theorist. He was someone who had acknowledged and was concerned about his own mental health and had sort of listened to people close to him about getting some help for that, is what I've been told. He was somebody who did feel as if he was being persecuted by the police, and I think it's interesting to sort of explore whether that was something that was factored into the police risk assessment as well, and whether there was a way they could have perhaps used that knowledge or that information to ameliorate the risk somewhat. Or, you know, was it actually a case of people being, or police being, too familiar with Desi and feeling too much as if he was somebody, a known quantity, as it were. You know, a local guy got caught up in the pandemic like so many people have in Victoria and sort of descended into a mental ill health, effectively. Did that mean that they didn't take this risk as seriously as they otherwise would have? I think there's so many questions there about this case, and his death really only means we get a better chance of answering them. It certainly doesn't lead to any less questions.
We'll be right back. Nino, I just want to turn to the search itself, reportedly the largest ever by Victorian police. Chief Commissioner Mike Bush really seemed to talk a lot about that, that it was, this was a very important moment for police officers at the end of a difficult investigation.
Yeah, look, I think you can separate out the fact that it was such a large search in some ways from the crimes Freeman committed. You know, it's impossible to know how many resources would have been allocated if we're talking about a manhunt for somebody who had not murdered two police officers. You know, that's a kind of hypothetical we can't answer, but certainly this has been something that's had a huge impact on the force here, not just in terms of the actual emotional toll of losing two officers that way and a third being badly injured, but also the sheer scale of officer power they've had to put on this. You know, it's hundreds of officers for months on end looking for somebody who's committed, you know, the most sort of horrible offending that can be committed against a police officer. And look, we've had other cases in Victoria of police officers being killed in the line of duty that are very, I suppose, formative of what Victoria Police is now and really have shaped our understanding of what the police force is in this state, whether it's the Russell Street bombing or other cases like that. There's really awful cases that have, any time a police officer is killed in the line of duty in this state, it's something that I think really strikes to the core of not only the police force but the state as a whole.
Mike Bush kept talking about closure for the families of the police officers.
So the first people who were contacted after the operation today were the families of the officers who had been killed, and Mike Bush did make a point of saying during his press conference that this would form some kind of closure for them. He also said he's going to be meeting with those families later today, before Mike Bush himself actually heads up to the crime scene where Freeman was shot. But he also touched on, I suppose, the broader end of a chapter, you know, for police who were, you know, searching for Freeman over the 7 months, but also those who'd been behind the scenes, I guess, involved in the investigation into what had happened.
And what about for the town of Pōpunka, who have been the centre of a lot of this search? I mean, how will people be feeling there?
Yeah, it's really fascinating because when I went up there towards the end of 2025, there wasn't very many visible signs at that point that this was, you know, going on and that this had happened and that, you know, it was a community that had been at the center of such an awful tragedy just a few months earlier. And things had, again, just to the untrained eye, appeared to be back to normal. But there's a psychological, you know, burden and a trauma in the unknown and in that uncertainty that kind of lingered as long as it was unclear what had happened to Freeman. It's quite strange in a way that community had gone completely back to normal. You know, there were no road closures. Everything from a tourism perspective had got back on track. There was actually a huge ultramarathon over Mount Buffalo this last weekend, which hundreds of people were in. So very close to where the shooting itself occurred. So very much from a visual sense, everything had got back to normal in that place. But there was a really clear sense from everybody I spoke to when you actually took the time to ask people how they were going and how they were feeling that they weren't going to be able to move on from this until they had some certainty about what had happened to Desi Freeman, and now they've got that.
You know, just finally, we heard that police have spoken to Desi Freeman's family, but what's going to happen next?
Yeah, so there's a number of things that are going to happen from this point on. Police have made really clear they're investigating who, if anyone, had been helping Desi over the past 7 months. There's Professional Standards Command investigation into the shooting itself. There's a investigation and an inquest process that'll kick off, I'd imagine, fairly soon. The coroner was actually heading up to Wawa today to look at the crime scene. So there's going to basically be a series of things that takes place over the next probably 12 to 18 months, perhaps even longer, that'll start to get at some of the outstanding questions that we have here.
Nino, thank you so much for talking to us today.
Thank you.
That was Justice and Courts reporter Nino Bucci. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria and Joe Koning, who also did the sound design and mixing. The executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.